Well, folks, we hope that you are having a great Thursday morning. It's really a beautiful morning this morning. I know we're supposed to get some rain. Again, let's be a little careful. It looks like so far this week we haven't had too many serious accidents, which is a good thing. As we get through this rainy season, let's do so with some success for certain. It just makes life so much easier for everyone, and especially those involved in accidents. If we can minimize that, just take our time, be more aware. A lot of folks on the interstate driving like they are in a Formula One race car race. I don't know where these people are going, and I don't know for why. I haven't seen any police lights chasing these individuals, but completely disruptive, just inappropriate, you know. You just putting people's lives at risk. It's uncalled for, you know, to cross lanes three times over, three times back, and in the matter of 10 to 20 seconds, going in and out of people. If you're trying to show off your driving prowess to those, I hope you're listening. Nobody gives a damn. They don't focus on your driving prowess. What they focus on is that you are an idiot. So if you like falling in the idiot category, go ahead. You've succeeded. You're an idiot. And that's the category you fall into. So just remember that every time you go to push that pedal and decide that you're going to see how many folks you can cross in front of in a lane of travel, and having them having to put their brakes on and having fender benders because you think you're some kind of special idiot, of a special designed idiot, engaging in idiotic driving. I hope this is not too overbearing with the idiot word, but I have some other appropriate words, but that might have to be on Substack, not on here. But I think you get the message. You know, you're scaring the bejesus out of everybody out there. For what purpose? For what purpose? At some point in time, your day is going to come where you're seriously hurt, and you're going to be looking for assistance, and folks are going to say, I'm not helping that idiot. He got what he deserved. He's wreaked havoc on everyone's life. And it's funny, like around 3 to 3:30, as you're going into the city, I happened to travel during that period of time a lot this past couple of weeks, and it's the same idiots doing it. Your license plate numbers have been placed in the system, and hopefully the system has the ability to go out, identify, and grab all the idiots that they can get their hands on. We got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to visit with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission, this week's crime show with him. We'll do a mid-year recap on the arrest stats for the NOPD by districts and LSP Troop NOLA. You will recall the other day we talked about, Ronald Surpass and myself, about an article in the New York Times where, you know, you don't see these types of articles in the Times. There was concern that half the people that actually commit murder in New York get away with it. They finally recognized that the solution rate there is not so good. They would have been even more depressed had they realized that that number that they posted was actually a high number for them. Because 5 years ago, that number would have been less 20%. And they were only solving about 30 to 32%. Which means two-thirds of murderers would not have been caught. And when you look at some of the other violent crime numbers, what you're going to find is they are, in some jurisdictions, not here, thankfully, NOPD's been improving, JP's been fairly strong for a long time, far exceed the national average. They're selectively incapacitating the impact criminal, and that's a good thing because you know that you when you selectively incapacitate them. This is what they do for a living. They're out there doing this each and every day. They don't pull one a month. That's not how they survive. They got to ride on the high of pulling the gun, putting the gun in people's face, taking their goods, and running around the street like an idiot, putting other people's lives at risk. And that's what this is all about. Did you see the video in Philadelphia? That collective group of idiots? I mean, it was almost comical. I thought it was a cartoon at first. How stupid all these people are in trying to get away. They hear shots fired. Instead of going down on the ground, they stand up and they start running. And they're behind a brick wall. I mean, it's like, what are we doing? We're just randomly firing in neighborhood. Who knows how many totally innocent victims got shot and or killed during the course of that thing. And it's not over. It's going to be retaliation number two, number three, number four. This thing has not ended. At 11:30, we will visit with Lou Fragosa, president and CEO of the Manning Family Children's Hospital. Lou is still working out, getting ready for that 100-mile, 100 kids, 100 miles mission on August the 16th. He will run the Leadville Trail. Now, if you've never been to Leadville, Leadville's claim to fame is that it is the highest municipality, I believe, is how they coin it. And I've been there. I've had lunch there. I've lost my breath there, walking from an incredible Mexican restaurant to a clothing store to buy more clothes because I was freezing my ass off. And Leadville is about as high as it's going to get in the United States. It's absolutely stunningly beautiful and miserably cold. And I don't really care what month you go there. The weather is all over the map. You cannot predict one way or the other. But he's going to go out on this mission on the 16th, and we'll talk with him about his preparation. Colonel Jeff McCausland joins us at our CBS military analyst. We'll get the latest on the Israel-Iran conflict. We haven't really been able to hammer down any definitive provisions to outline this ceasefire and moving forward as to where we're going to be. There's still a bunch of rhetoric moving back and forth on this issue. Not much difference over there with the Russians and the Ukrainians. And now we find Houthis coming back and disrupting the shipping channels in the Red Sea, the Strait of Hormuz, taking some vessels out. The Israelis are going back on them. We'll try to pull all of this together, see what it means, and can we regroup on this issue? Laura Cannizzaro-Rodrigue joins us. Rafi Goyeneche presented a number of cases that were very odd in the way that they went down. And it almost was like everyone inside the courtroom was working in concert with one another to move these cases forward. Laura's going to bring a different perspective about this and talk about this situation, talk about the danger of this situation. And I guess she a little exacerbated and maybe even mystified like me as to how did we get to this point that one would even want to engage in this situation. So it's a little interesting as to what's going on here, and it all has to do with the way these cases are reported out. I don't think anybody thought anyone would really catch on to what was happening, but we have a lot of eyes on the system, thankfully. They give a damn. They care. They want to make sure that we're doing this the right thing. They want to make sure that we're selectively incapacitating the impact criminal. They want to make sure that everybody's doing their job. Because if they don't, then these important systems are of no value to us, quite frankly. There's no value proposition, and there's no return on our investment. And you know how the public feels about that. Speaking about return on investment, we are so upside down with Mayor LaToya Cantrell. I don't know that the bad state of this, that even a lemon law would address this. And I'm trying to think of what law is beyond the lemon law. This is horrible. I mean, she does not care. It gets worse. It's all about her. She's going to flex her muscle. She's going to show the council. She's going to show Sidney Torres. She's going to show the FQMD. She's going to show the business community. She's going to show everybody that she is the mayor. So she issues an emergency, declares an emergency, and then utilizes emergency power in the declaration of the emergency in an effort to install, you got it, Henry Consulting as the trash contractor in the French Quarter, right? Now, there are terms and conditions upon which you can declare an emergency. And anybody worth their weight and salt who would have looked at this set of circumstances, I think would have said to the mayor, you're on tenuous ground at best, and I don't think you can win this. Now, that would be a broad assumption that this gets before a judge that actually understands the law, because we've seen a series of these rulings that are coming down that they don't even want to hear. You know, when you have an adversarial system that there's two sides of a story, they listen to one side. I like that side. Injunction. You know, it's kind of what's happening right now. And you don't get to present your evidence. And it's being done on the federal side as well. So much so the U.S. Supreme Court has had to slap back on the authority of some of the district judges for doing the same thing. I like that side. Injunction. Great. Perfect. So you don't create the emergency by eliminating a contract that exists prior to the declaration of the emergency. So what this brilliant mayor did, a summa cum laude, a magna cum laude, an individual that thinks on planes that no one else can understand the rationale or the reason, because this is so complex thinking that it's really above the understanding of any human being. Now, granted, there may be an AI robot out there that might be able to grab this line of thinking being articulated by the mayor, who has been primed for this, right? I mean, stack up all of the teaching opportunities that she has attended around the world, both on land and in the metaphysical. No one in leadership in the city of New Orleans has the breadth and depth of the training that this leader, LaToya Cantrell, has on procurement, public bid law, climate change, hurricanes. She's got it all. Garbage contracts, the whole nine yards. So she's got a theory that she's able to do this. We just don't have the capacity to understand how we get there. Because the interesting thing is that you have an operational contract right now that takes you to the end of the year that's being performed by an individual who you're trying to push out. And by pushing that out, person out, that's how you create the emergency. So you cancel someone else's ability to deliver on services that have already been procured, and you think that you could utilize that as a pretense to declare an emergency and go out and hire the person you want. Now, there might be an upside here. I mean, maybe we need to do a little bit more research where we could cancel Mayor LaToya Cantrell, declare an emergency that we don't have a mayor, we don't have a leader, we don't have someone with metaphysical capabilities, we don't have someone with convention infused experience on so many different issues that are faced by city government around the world. And she's gone. We can just get rid of her. Then we have to go find that person. Could be interesting. Just having a little fun here, folks, because this is embarrassing. I don't know how else to put it. You know, somebody took the mayor's marble, and she's kicking and screaming, and she's going to show everybody that she's going to win this. And in 100-something days, people are going to say, that was the most idiotic move ever. Why would she engage in that? Where, you know, she couldn't go wrong by just letting the thing play itself out in the courts with Sidney Torres exercising the rights under that contract he had, and instead of wasting everybody else's time. Makes no sense at all. Unless you got some kind of favored son status or whatever it may be with Troy Henry. But, you know, the best course of action is to just let this roll. So the council is going to have to go through a bunch of machinations today to beat back this individual move by the mayor. She's created the emergency, and now she wants to provide the solution to it. It doesn't work that way. Emergencies are declared when other people cause the emergencies to happen. Like, you know, typically that would be Mother Nature. And you might have missed that class. But Mother Nature creates a lot of different things that would compel one to call upon an emergency. You might want to go back and read the paperwork on that. That Mother Nature's a big, strong influence on doing that, and it may have been the legislative intent, just maybe, that addressing issues of Mother Nature is why we are and why we find ourselves there. I don't know. But I will tell you this. This has been every day this week, another new revelation. How many of you are going to be tired if we continue down this track for the remaining 100-plus days of this administration where we're playing these silly games with this mayor? I mean, it's going to be a joke. Who is going to want to work for the city? There's a part of me that believes that she wants to screw this up so bad that it's going to take the next mayor 3 years just to figure out where all the problems are and in trying to remediate it. And I guess she feels like that would pretty much match her legacy. Nobody has any confidence that she's done very much right at all. So why not just go with it? go with it, and, you know, let's see how much time we can consume with the next administration in trying to remedy the rights of this. It, you know, makes no sense. Still fighting over garbage pickup. And we know we have a vendor that has done a stellar job. The neighbors want it. The business owners want it. Some elected officials want it. You know, and it's like, so why would this not be easy? And it's not like a new player to the game. He's been around, been doing it for a long time. And in every occasion that he had an opportunity to serve in that capacity, guess what? Everybody thought he did a great job. Now, I was in this business 40 years. There were not many vendors that were ever talked about in that way, ever revered in that way. Can't think of one. Maybe the mayor wasn't aware of that. You got to hold of one that's doing something and work for you that it hasn't happened anyplace else. And then again, maybe that's why you don't want him. He's doing too good a job. And therefore, they wouldn't be talking about you as much. They would be talking about him. That's when the narcissistic leader comes in, right? Does anybody have any doubt that that's the case here? You know, the moment she went to the podium and said, the reason that I'm getting crucified is I'm black and I'm a female, she was going down the, oh, woe is me, narcissistic trail, right? Because it couldn't have been there was anything that I did that was wrong, anything that I did where I rubbed the constituency the wrong way, any hire that I made that just didn't smell right, none of that. It couldn't have been any of that. It has to be that I'm a black female. Interestingly, a lot of the folks that are criticizing are black females and black males. I don't know how she squares that up. Probably with the same line of reasoning of creating an emergency, where it's a fiction, it's a legal fiction. But we'll continue to follow this, and I'm sure it's going to be something tomorrow, and I'm sure it'll be something else on Monday. But we shall see. We'll be right back. Well, and this topic should really matter to you. About week and a half ago or so, in our weekly show with Raphael Goinecci, we talked about preliminarily about some cases that were before the criminal district court that just did not smell right. And it was the state of Louisiana versus Tamika Dozart, the state of Louisiana versus Darnell Wallace and Allison Conrad, the state of Louisiana versus Kendrick Martin, and the state of Louisiana versus Chantel Thomas. The judge in this case was Judge Roche, and it didn't smell right, didn't look right, the outcome didn't look right. It looked like there could have been the fixes in, and here to talk to us about that is Laura Cannizzaro-Rodri, co-founder of Bayou Mama Bears, former Orleans prosecutor. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Laura, I've been in the business a long time, but not as a prosecutor. Probably wouldn't have seen this as quickly as you or others working in a prosecution office. But do you ever recall seeing a scenario like this in the years of you serving as a prosecutor?
No, I have never seen anything like this. And I think that the way you introduced this is sort of the timeline of how this plays out. And it was really shock from the Metropolitan Crime Commission and myself when we saw what was going on. But essentially what happens is there seems to be a high number of not guilty verdicts coming out of certain particular sections of court. When that happened, there was immediately the speculation as to what was going on. Why was one or two or certain particular judges having such high number of not guilty verdicts? Well, what we found was the response to that was that a staff member from the court said, before you blame the judge for automatic or for the number of not guilty verdicts, maybe you ought to see what's happening in some of these cases, and provided transcripts for 16 cases. That's just out of one section of court in over a nine-month period. So this is all we have so far that we know of. But when the transcripts became available, and when Mr. Goyeneche from the Metropolitan Crime Commission got them, what he saw was shocking. The state was saying that they were ready to proceed to trial. They then waived their opening statements. They say, no, I'm not going to do an opening. Then in most of the cases, they say, all right, I'm going to call Officer Smith to the stand. Say his name in the hallway three times. No response for Officer Smith. Okay, the state rests their case. Defense, no witnesses, not guilty verdict. And it was something none of us had ever seen before. It was announcing ready for trial, presenting no evidence, no testimony, resting the case, and then having a judge render a verdict of not guilty, and what Rafael Goyeneche described as the illusion of a trial, what has been termed as fake trials going on in criminal district court. And the fact that the MCC found 16 of these in just one section of court over a nine-month period is what has everybody extremely shocked about this.
Yeah, because that's an inordinate amount of cases. I mean,
well, that's
crazy.
A lot. Yeah, and so, yeah, you know, the question is, and some people say, well, did the officer know he was supposed to be there? And for people who don't understand or haven't had any experience in criminal court, in Orleans Parish, remember, criminal court, those judges are just assigned to criminal court. So all they do is criminal dockets all day. Typically, when a case is accepted, there will be notifications given to all the officers on the case, or they should be. It should be set up that way. So an officer may typically get notified that any of their cases are appearing in court, whether it be for motions or for trial. They'll get multiple notifications a week of various cases. The way it has always worked, and over the decade that I was there, and anybody who has worked in that building, you would call an officer beforehand for many reasons. First of all, you want to prepare them. You want to give them a copy of their report, review the case. You should be doing this before anything, before a trial or a motion. And so you call them and you say, hey, look, this is going to trial tomorrow. Can you be there at this time? Look, he typically starts at this time or whatever. It appears that even if the officers may get their notification that the case is set, there's no communication going on telling the officer you should be there or you need to be in court or anything like that. They simply have the guy or girl's name called in the hallway and then say the officer didn't show up and then I rest my case. You know, it's extremely disturbing. There's a lot of – and certainly in some of the cases they're calling the victim's name and the victim's not answering, so they rest their case. It's very, very strange behavior of really what we're seeing are fake trials. I mean, I have no idea. The only thinking or the only rationale behind this is the state should be dismissing a case. First of all, if you don't have any evidence or if you know your witnesses are not there, which you clearly know that, then why would you say ready for trial and proceed along in a trial? The only reason you would do that is because you don't want to actually be the one who dismisses the case. You want the judge to render a not guilty verdict. Then it's much easier to say, look, the judge did that. I went to trial. The judge gave a not guilty verdict. But the reality when you get the transcript is, no, you didn't go to trial. That's not a trial. And in fact, as Rafael Goyeneche pointed out, in some of these cases, no witness was ever sworn in. And so jeopardy hasn't even attached in these cases. The case didn't, that trial didn't even happen. It's not a real trial. You could actually bring those cases back, but there's no intent to. Nobody wants to. So it's really one of the most bizarre things that I think most of us have ever seen happening in Orleans Parish Criminal Court. And you know, that's a high bar to say that out of coming out of Orleans Parish, because I feel like we always say this is shocking, but this one is really, I don't think anybody has seen anything like this.
So I'm going to ask the question you don't have to answer, but where's the Supreme Court on all of this? I mean, I don't know if this is a scheme or not, but this is what I know. What I know is that they are impugning the reputation of the arresting officer. This is a sham. It's not really a get up and go to trial situation, right? They are impugning the reputation of all the witnesses. They're actually impugning the reputation of the players to this conspiracy. You know, that they're not ready. People are not there. And therefore, we're going to let this whole thing go. And it seems to me that it's really sending the message to the public is we're going to waste your time. We're going to waste your money for a prescribed outcome that on a stat sheet will look better for me as a prosecutor with a finding of a not guilty as opposed to a dismissal for not being prepared or whatever that may be, that we really just pull the wool over the eyes of the entire community.
Right.
Now,
I agree.
If our Louisiana Supreme Court is not interested in taking on a case like this and doling out some disciplinary action, I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, the only component here is somebody didn't take money from somebody.
I mean, you're exactly right. And I think that I think the Supreme Court will have to take a look at this. I mean, you have the transcripts also show things where one of the trials was on Halloween Day. And it certainly appears that everybody in there knows what's about to happen. The judge even makes some comment. One of the lawyers says, maybe I should have worn a costume today. And the judge says, we're about to see if this one's a trick or a treat. You know, very strange language. In another one, the defense attorney does an opening statement, and most of them, you don't see opening statements by either side. And in this one, the defense attorney does an open statement, and he knows before anything happens that the state is calling no witnesses. I mean, how would he have known that? He says in his opening, the state's going to present no witnesses and no evidence at all, and you will have no choice but to find my client not guilty. And that's exactly what happens. Well, how on earth would the defense attorney know that ahead of time? You know, and what is clear from the transcripts is there's no effort to prepare these cases, even in the ones where they ask for an officer to arrive in court. So in one particular case, the judge says, you don't have any of your officers here. He says, the ADA says, no, I'm going to call him. The judge goes, it's noon now. You're waiting till noon to call the guy? Well, they get a hold of the officer. He says, yeah, I'll be there in 20 minutes. I mean, the guy wants to testify. It's his case. The judge says, I'm not waiting another 20 minutes. It's the middle of the day. You're just calling the guy now to get to court. So the state just rests their case, and that's it, not guilty. You know, it's really, really very bizarre behavior. And I do think you will have to have some sort of review here. I cannot see how the Supreme Court will glaze over this. The other question that's becoming front and center is, how many more times did this happen in how many sections of court? I mean, do we have any way of finding this out? Are we going to have to dig through every transcript of every not guilty case that came out of this administration? How long has this been happening? You know, were victims notified? The last transcript I saw involved domestic abuse strangulation, and the guy had also violated a protective order against the same woman shortly before this. Same thing. They call her name in the hall, no answer. They call the officer's name, no answer, not guilty. Remove his ankle monitor. You're free to go, sir. I mean, you know, it's chaos.
Laura, you may not have thought about this, but I'm just kind of curious. Is there a way to remediate this case at this point in time, or is res judicata set in and it's done?
So according to, and honestly, the sad part is because I don't know that this has ever been tested before, because we don't see this issue coming up. But technically, because in any case where no witness was sworn in, they should be able to bring those cases back, and they should be required to. They accepted those cases. They said, I think there's enough to accept this case and bring it to court. The state picked the trial date. They say what day will be ready to proceed to trial, except for they're not. Now they say they are, and then they present no evidence. But in cases where no witnesses were sworn in, those should be able to be salvaged. Now, the sad part is there's a few cases where they swore in one witness, knowing they would not meet their burden with that one witness, put on 5-6 sentences of testimony, introduced no exhibits, and then rested. Those, unfortunately, will be dead. A witness was sworn. Jeopardy will attach to that, and those cases will be dead. And on just a few of the transcripts I looked at, just so the public understands this, many of them were four-time felony offenders, some of them having armed robbery convictions, distribution of cocaine convictions, possession with intent to distribute cocaine convictions. One of the people who got a not guilty was rearrested for being in possession of a stolen gun while in possession of a drug just weeks after the not guilty verdict comes out. I mean, it's really shocking. And remember, we're only talking about, these are just the facts of 16. Who knows how many there are and what have been the ramifications of that? Who knows how many of those domestic abusers went out to further perpetrate more violence against some of the females? You know, we don't even know to the extent of which this happened.
How devious are you to develop this kind of scheme, though, and to think that you get away with it? I mean,
and that's going to be, I think, what's going to require further investigation.
I mean, I'd like to find out who developed this scheme, and they need to lose their bar license. You don't wake up one morning and say, "Hey, I've got a solution to this problem." We could put on a fake trial and we get to the outcome that we want of a verdict. And then we get all the pressure off of all of us that we didn't do all the work necessary, you know, and 6-2 and even over and out.
Exactly.
I mean, think about the devious mind of someone who actually went through the machinations of thinking about this. Would we want this person even in the criminal justice system today? I wouldn't. I wouldn't want him with a law license. I mean,
right.
I just don't understand how they think this was going to be a good idea. I mean, it contorted and bastardized all the notions of traditional fair play and justice on so many different fronts. Just my silly review.
Look, I completely agree with that, and I do think that a review of this will require a review of what the policy was. Did this come from a supervisor? Was this happening in other sections? Was this an agreed-upon strategy in the office? Who was aware of it? All of those things are going to have to be looked into further, and I expect that the Metropolitan Crime Commission will follow up with all of that.
Well, there's probably no doubt about that, for sure.
Right.
As always, Laura Cannizzaro-Rodrigue, thank you so much for your time, your follow-up, your backfilling on this. We really appreciate it. Have a great week.
Thank you for having me. You too.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we are going to visit with Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. We'll get the latest on the Israeli-Iranian conflict. We might touch on Ukraine a little bit as well. At 11:30, Lou Fragoso, president and CEO of Manning Family Children's. He's going to run 100 miles, one mission for 100 kids. On August the 16th, and they start at the highest point in America.